One of the biggest challenges we face as a state and really as a nation is how do we keep parole prisoners from becoming repeat offenders and winding up back behind bars? Solid evidence points to post-secondary education as one of the major keys to helping former inmates build productive lives after parole. After many years without any funding for prisoners to be able to access higher education, the Michigan Department of Corrections has gotten a $1 million grant to launch post-secondary educational programs and vocational training to a small number of inmates who are near parole. The program model is based on the Pathways from Prison Post-Secondary Education program. It was created by the Vera Institute of Justice. That's a nonprofit center for justice policy and practice. It's based in New York. Joining us from New York is the director of the program, Fred Patrick. And also joining us is a former inmate at the Ionia Correctional Facility. His name is Rick, and we're withholding his last name. Rick was sent to prison in 1984. He was 23, and he served a 9.5-year sentence on a felony charge. It was thanks to classes that he was able to take while in prison, classes offered through Macomb Community College, that Rick found work and built a life for himself after his release. Welcome to both of you. Fred, will you start by tracking for us the history of educational efforts in prison?
Sure. Well, I'm not quite the historian, but as you alluded to, there was, for many years, Pell Grants were a major part of the funding stream for in-prison education programs. And then with the passage of federal legislation in the early 90s, that sort of led to major pullback, again, being that it was a major source of funding. And what we have now are lots of privately funded efforts, but many of which sort of don't have the full range and breadth that you were able to get when you had the Pell Grants. And so what we're trying to do through the Pathways Project, which I should add was funded, is being funded by five large national foundations, Open Society Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates, the Ford Foundation, the Sunshine Lady Foundation, and the William K. Kellogg Foundation. They all came together with the view of building a demonstration project that would make that would build the evidence-based case that post-secondary education, along with the needed wraparound supports in terms of housing assistance, family services, employment, placement, that those things together and collectively could make a huge difference in terms of not only increasing public safety, but allowing individuals to better support families and children, to be taxpaying, contributing members of society. And so we're trying to, over the course of the next 4 or 5 years, build that evidence. A lot of the earlier research, of course, suggested that post-secondary education could reduce recidivism by as much as 73%.
What does the Pathways Project look like? How will it operate, and what kind of courses are being offered to the inmates who are able to take part of this?
Sure. So we're currently operating in 3 states. Those states are Michigan, New Jersey, and North Carolina. And it represents partnerships between local colleges and universities and the local prison system, but also parole offices, employers, and reentry service providers in the community. Eligible inmates who, by the way, have to meet all the same educational standards as one would in the community. So you have to have a high school diploma or GED. You have to test in terms of being eligible for college credit courses. If not, there's the developmental track. And so the courses that are being offered range from the liberal arts associates that's being provided in New Jersey to the Associate of Applied Science degree that's being offered in North Carolina. And Michigan is a mixture with a focus on liberal arts, but also importantly, occupational certificates are a part of this. So individuals are able to, after a certain amount of credits, 12, 16, 18 credits, for instance, they're able to walk away with certificates in things like computer information sciences, business administrations, viable workplace credentials that allow them to connect with that workforce post-release and get jobs that will afford them the opportunity to support themselves and their families.
So giving them the kind of skills that employers are looking for.
Absolutely. One of the things that we required, we put out a limited RFP back in the fall of 2012, inviting 6 states, Michigan being one of them, to apply, to participate. And we required as a part of this that the employers be a part of the equation, that they be one of the stakeholders at the table. So the states will have what we're calling stakeholder implementation teams with employers at the table, and we want employers not just on the back end in terms of providing jobs, but early on providing internships, mentoring, and also being a part of informing what curricula should be available. Again, we see pathways not just as the provision of higher education to inmates while incarcerated and post-release, but importantly, that it's a part of addressing the college completion agenda. That's a big part of U.S. domestic policy. We see it as a part of the economic prosperity in terms of addressing workplace needs, and importantly, a part of community renewal, sort of ensuring that communities that are disproportionately impacted by crime and incarceration, that individuals are able to come home, get jobs, be providers for themselves, and thus help bring vibrancy back to many of those communities.
Rick, I want to turn to you. You were at Ionia Correctional Facility. You were serving a 9.5-year sentence. What motivated you to apply for the Pell Grant?
What motivated me was that the career field that I was in prior to being incarcerated, I knew I could never go back into.
And what was that?
I am a former military police officer.
All right. So that door was closed to you?
That door and anything dealing with security, yes.
So how did you hear about it, and what did you decide you wanted to study?
The way we heard about it was that at the Ionia Correctional Facility, what they do is they post, a notification up there, and they tell you when classes are going to be offered or when there's going to be an orientation or such, and then you go ahead and you sign up for it. The courses open at that time were an associate's in generals, an associate's in accounting, and an associate's in business. I never saw myself owning my own business. Me, like most other people, I hate math, so I never saw myself as an accountant. But I find that we all use math on a daily basis, so technically we're accountants in one way or another. But the associates in general, I used that because it had the more elective credits, and I coupled that with my vocational training that I also received while I was at the Ionia Correctional Facility.
And what was that training?
That training was welding.
All right.
I have over 4,000 hours of training in combination welding.
So, Rick, how did getting that education and getting that associate's degree, how did that change your perspective on the future that you saw once you were out of Ionia?
That changed it in a way that where I saw myself as being able to be self-supportive. I didn't have to rely on somebody else. I didn't have to rely on a handout. I most definitely did not want to go on some kind of state assistance where I collected a check every 2 weeks. I wanted to stand on my own 2 feet, work with my own 2 hands and know that I was contributing back to society. Up until the time that I was incarcerated, I had always worked. Nobody plans on me committing a crime, at least, in my case, I never planned on committing a crime. But I knew that once I did become incarcerated, I could never go back to my same field of work.
So how did the training and the degree that you got help you once you were paroled and it was time to reenter society? How did you navigate that reentry?
I went through the job market searching based like anybody else would. You pick up the paper. The Internet wasn't something that I was versed in at the time. So I primarily relied on word of mouth, contacts, and newspaper. And I went and I kept applying for jobs. And I probably for every 100 jobs I applied for, I probably might have gotten 2 interviews.
And do you believe that was because you had to check the box that said you had been incarcerated?
On most of them, I can honestly say yes.
Mm-hmm.
But the associate's degree definitely helped. Some jobs that I applied for, you had to have a degree. They were looking more at your skills than more at at what you had done in life. But it was only based on the education that I had that actually got me through the door.
So that was truly the key. Fred Patrick, as you hear Rick talk about the challenges that face, the idea that you walk in and you see someone tossing your whole packet into the trash, how does someone crack through that and get through that popular misconception that this person could be trouble?
Sure. First of all, I wanted to say thank you, Rick, for sharing your story. I think you brought up several very crucial points that need to be amplified, and that's that most folks sort of are looking to be self-supportive, to take care of families and themselves and their kids. A huge part of the Pathways Initiative is that employer engagement piece. It's bringing all of the support services in place from the start. So you'll have the reentry service providers who can work on family services issues, who can work on housing needs, and importantly, who can work on those employer connections. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing outreach to employers to do public education around what's available in terms of tax incentives for hiring formerly incarcerated. We're going to talk about the fact that in some ways these individuals, because they are looking for that second chance, are an even safer bet, if you will, because some of them know what the consequences are to quote-unquote failing. So part of it is educating employers, also beginning to do a sort of public education campaign around the sense that people deserve a second chance, that you have numerous employers. Sometimes people quietly will employ large numbers of individuals who are formerly incarcerated, and simply they're not looking for PR to do it. But we're looking to get some of those folks on board as spokespersons who can at least talk to other business leaders about it. And ultimately, there is the issue of what's the law and what's right. And surprisingly and happily, a lot of states and jurisdictions are moving towards what's called banning the box, in mm-hmm. which that question of conviction is being removed from the initial application so that individuals can at least get in the door and present themselves, and an individual can see efforts and evidence of rehabilitation. An individual can talk through what they have to offer in terms of meeting the bottom line business needs of that organization.
Fred, I'd love your thoughts, and actually you as well, Rick. I'll start with you, Fred. What would you say to someone who would say, you know, it isn't fair for someone who's committed a crime to get this kind of assistance over someone who has never committed a crime, especially since college education is expensive? What do you say to them, Fred?
I say it's not an either or. You know, sometimes I think it's easy for us to fall into these polar extreme arguments. In some ways, it's a straw man argument. The reality is you have thousands and thousands of people, millions of people incarcerated. We spend billions upon billions of dollars in prison costs. We have evidence that suggests that exposure to high, post-secondary education in prison leads to a huge reduction in recidivism, and that ultimately benefits the public coffers, which means you free up more dollars for roads and hospitals and education. It also allows individuals to come home and be what we want everyone to be, which is a taxpaying, contributing member of society. They are able to take care of themselves and their family and therefore not necessarily have to tap into public assistance. And that's ultimately what we want. Post-secondary education also ultimately leads to individuals being, and the evidence says this, better parents, and therefore they can sort of help improve the educational outcomes of their kids. There's evidence that it increases civic participation. And so all around, there's a societal benefit.
So a huge ripple effect. Rick,
absolutely.
Rick, what would you say to the critics?
I definitely agree with what Fred said. But I would also have to tell the critics that, okay, when I received my Pell Grant, I received that for free. I didn't pay any of that back. And it was a good investment on society's part. When I received my vocational training, that was also for free. I didn't have to invest anything but time, and time I had a lot of. Since I've received that training and have been out, my conviction is now 29 years old. I've been out for 17 years. In that 17 years, I've been a productive member of society. I haven't been in any trouble. I've never been arrested, haven't even picked up a traffic ticket. Part of that, and I say part of it, is because I've been able to be self-sufficient. I haven't had to struggle very much for work, to have a paycheck, to be a productive member of society. You know, I think it would have been different had I not had the education, not had the training. And then been trying to reinvent myself. You know, nobody becomes a millionaire working at McDonald's except McDonald's. You have to have a job that will be able to support your family. It's like Fred says, if you don't have that, then you look for alternative ways to start supplementing your income, and which usually leads you back into crime. I've seen a lot of guys when I was inside that I knew got paroled. They went home, and a few months later they were back. And you get to talking with them and stuff, and they said, you know, I I got stupid, I screwed up, you know, I should have done things different, you know, but, you know, I needed the money. So
I would say, Fred Patrick, a story like Rick's is what warms your heart and keeps you going in the work you do.
Absolutely, and I wanted to add one other thing. I think it's important that we understand that Pathways, in terms of this national demonstration project, you know, does not rely on federal funding or Pell Grants.
Right.
It's those five national foundations that I talked about. And as you know, foundations are often sort of in the vanguard, you know, for social policy change. And what we're hoping to demonstrate is that in-prison education, higher education, with those wraparound supports, does make the crucial difference. I might also add, because oftentimes people talk about the whole Pell Grant story, and there's a fact that is often lost, and that is when Pell Grant eligibility for inmates ended in 1994, that represented only 0.1% of all the Pell Grants received. At that point, Pell Grants were $5.3 billion, and only $34 million were being spent on incarcerated individuals. So the investment was quite small. And yet the public safety gains are potentially huge. And that's what we're hoping to prove through the 4 or 5 years of this demonstration, in which we'll then have an independent evaluation done by the RAND Corporation. And we want to build that evidence to show the public, to show public policymakers, elected officials, that this is, in-prison education is a cost-efficient and effective use of public dollars.
Fred Patrick with the Vera Institute of Justice, directing and guiding the Pathways from Prison Post-Secondary Education Program. And Rick, thank you both so much for talking with us and sharing your insights. And we will continue to follow as this Pathways Project initiative continues as a demonstration project in the state of Michigan. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Thank you.